Royalties is not the place to look, because royalties are sufficiently risk-free that there isn't need for additional engineering of royalties. Where we have a problem is those places where we have 10% of a mine and we've not made money for many, many, many years. Look at bauxite. We discovered, for instance, that Bosai, you know, consistently say the operation is unprofitable and there's nothing you can do about it. They just simply say, well, they mine the bauxite, they don't make any money. So the 20% or so that we have in the bauxite regime is meaningless because they just clearly don't make money.
But is there not a difference? Here we are putting the royalties into a vehicle, a company, and hoping that this company will turn that money over and give us profit.
Okay. In that regard, if you think it's the $300 million that, you know, you can reinvest better, you have a MIF. You've changed the law in the MIF, which enables the MIF to set up an SPV, right? Today, without a JAPA, the MIF can set up a local SPV and say, what I want to put the $300 million a year that we get in gold is this, let's discuss it. Because I'll make more money from this, and that. There's no need for any convoluted structure,
right?
Because we know that money is fairly certain.
Okay.
The question that arises where you need innovative thinking is where the money appears not to be coming. You seem to have an asset. It's illiquid assets, right? When we do financial engineering and financial innovation, it's where you have an illiquid asset and you want to make it more liquid.
Okay.
Not when you have a very liquid asset and you now want to go and turn it into a more speculative asset. I don't understand that logic. If you look at what has happened in the JAPA transaction, it is quite clear that someone very skilled had set out to circumvent the process, without doubt. Royalties is much more immune because we say whether or not you are making profit or not, give us our 5%. So if you want to maximize royalty intake, your proper behavior should be how you spend the money. It's as simple as that. On the other hand, we've now got to a situation where of all the minerals, that money that comes from minerals, maybe 90% or more increasing are just from royalties. Which then raises the question of this 10% equity we hold in companies, why are they not paying the dividends? So if there is a thorny problem to solve in minerals, it is that segment, the issue of how we maximize the returns to equity. And the arguments that have been made over a number of times have included the creation of a super company or super vehicle that has the muscle to make sure that representation in terms of board roles and things like that are stronger. So that the government, for instance, is able to exert within these companies enough management pressure to ensure that we get paid. There are issues to do with, obviously, poor auditing. So I was just recently being told that if you go to the mines and you have these GRE officers that are supposed to make sure that their activities are properly auditable, some of them have been at the same mine for 13 years. And there are instances where it's quite clear that some of these people that are supposed to make sure that the volumes of gold that are being produced are properly audited, have no clue what they are doing, they're highly under-incentivized, their systems are not there. So we have big problems when it comes to auditability of how much gold is being produced and the costs.
Or they may be compromised.
That's a possibility. Then you have a situation also where when you look at the cost structure of gold, it becomes very difficult at that theoretical level to suggest any improvement because sometimes shareholders are getting 1.5%, and they are disclosing costs that suggest that maybe 60-something percent of all costs are being spent in the country. So you look like, okay, maybe we are making enough already. Until you have to dig deep into it, then you realize that in actual fact, a lot of the purchases that are purported to be local are not sufficiently local in the way that they impact local value chains and things like that. So when you look at all of those things, we need increased presence in terms of management decision making in these mines. And a super vehicle might be able to attract the right people to do those things. In simple terms, royalties is not the place to look, because royalties are sufficiently risk-free that there isn't need for additional engineering of royalties. Where we have a problem is those places where we have 10% of a mine and we've not made money for many, many, many years. Look at bauxite. We discovered, for instance, that Bosai, you know, consistently say the operation is unprofitable and there's nothing you can do about it. They just simply say, well, they mine the bauxite, they don't make any money. So the 20% or so that we have in the bauxite regime is meaningless because they just clearly don't make money.
But is there not a difference? Here we are putting the royalties into a vehicle, a company, and hoping that this company will turn that money over and give us profit.
Okay. In that regard, if you think it's the $300 million that, you know, you can reinvest better, you have a MIF. You've changed the law in the MEF, which enables the MEF to set up an SPV, right? Today, without a JAPA, the MEF can set up a local SPV and say, what I want to put the $300 million a year that we get in gold is this, let's discuss it. Because I'll make more money from this, and that. There's no need for any convoluted structure, right? Because we know that money is fairly certain.
Okay.
The question that arises where you need innovative thinking is where the money appears not to be coming. You seem to have an asset. It's illiquid assets, right? When we do financial engineering and financial innovation, is when you have an illiquid asset and you want to make it more liquid.
Okay.
Not when you have a very liquid asset and you now want to go and turn it into a more speculative asset. I don't understand that logic. If you look at what has happened in that JAPA transaction, it is quite clear that someone very skilled has set out to circumvent the process, without doubt.
Given this consensus which has emerged, including in the OSP's report, really, if the president is acting as a proper trustee for the beneficial owners, who are the people of this country, we can't proceed. Even with this thing, it is not in the interest of the people of this country. That's the consensus. I've not heard anybody outside die-hard loyalists or people close to the deal coming out to defend it. The points made also about the role of parliament, which goes again to a failure of oversight on behalf of the people, adds to this thing about a kind of political elite consensus about managing our resources. In this case, actually, primarily not even in their own interest. In general, foreign companies and their shareholders have been the main beneficiaries of our resources. And one of the things which has been clear since the commodities boom is how all the contracts that have been signed across the continent, their terms are so poor that we don't even get the returns that we should be getting.
The president's directive is that after he had seen the report, he also asked the finance minister to also bring his response, which is a confidential memo. And he said, the president has authorized to be made public that report, also the memorandum, to contribute to the national discourse on the matter.
I'm saying that that proposal by the president really doesn't stand up if in the context of the totality of the conclusions of the OSP report. It doesn't stand up in the face of the consensus that the OSP report finds with all the technical, economic, process criticisms that have been made of the JAPA deal. So if the president is acting in the interest of the beneficial owners of this resource, why does he want to persist with something which has been found to be flawed in so many aspects? So even though the president has directed, it is our right and responsibility, first as the beneficial owners, the citizens, okay, also who have an interest in this case, to ask, to analyze the president's reaction, to find out whether really it's a reaction which has legs.
The CSOs.
He may have the power to direct. That's his power. But it is possible to conclude that the president's proposals don't have legs.
You saw this approach by informing cabinet that there was an urgent need to get money into the for development. What are we looking at in terms of development through this vehicle?
Yeah. Samson, what we are envisioning is that we're going to create the largest sort of royalty company in Africa. And so we'll put about a fifth of the money aside in the quest for acquisition of other royalties as we build up this company. And you can see how $2 million can become $38 billion in a matter of time if managed properly. And that's amazing resources for that. So we'll put that type of money away as we look for that. The second aspect is that you look at the whole value chain of gold. And Ghana does not really participate in that much. First of all, we don't even have an international standard refinery for all the gold that we have mined. And so that we need to invest in and to make sure that when once the Ghana stamp is on bullion, you know, it is accepted internationally. The whole tourism, education, mining communities investment has not been done well. I mean, it is quite tragic when you look at Takwa and Obuasi, given the same rules, how far we have come or how far we have not come. So there will be investments in that place. How is it that, you know, being such leaders in cocoa and gold, you cannot, you and I, Samson, name 2 or 3 millionaires in this area? You know, let's find a way in which there's dedicated resources so that we can support, you know, miners in Ghana. The difference between us and South Africa, you know, the South Africans own those places, and we have other companies doing that. That needs to be reversed, but that needs deliberateness, you know, and these resources will help. Then, of course, when the president sent me to Parliament for the mid-year, as you know, we announced Obatampa, which is a $100 billion enterprise that we have on our books, a quarter of our GDP, of which 70% will be private sector and 30% will be that. So the issue of supporting the construction of the district hospitals, and then here the president has also said that this will be done by Ghanaian contractors, because he's thinking through this whole anemic response to housing and saying, how do we build our contractors so that from there we segue into a national mass housing construction plan? And I think that is necessary. A third element is the whole financial chassis. And so the creating of a national development bank, which will be a wholesale bank, so that we can then invest in our venture capital, in our Exim banks, in our Ghanaian banks, to build this regional hub that we have committed to. So it becomes, you know, pushing ourselves beyond what you say, the poverty of ambition, to realize that this transformation, once God willing, the president is giving 4 more years, we take off running.
Are we not capable of listing, itemizing the specific development projects,
yeah,
with clear timelines tied to the revenue, the money that is coming from this enterprise, so that will be your social contract? So
I think if you were to deconstruct what I just said, you know, first 20% for royalty acquisitions, you know, around and to build this enterprise. Second, the value chain of gold, which means that what money are you putting in to build this world-class refinery, etc., and what do we do for our indigenous communities. Third, I talked about the hospitals and home construction and support for the National Development Bank. So those can be spelled out for you.
The 20% that you say is already there, untouched. The 20% of the royalties, correct?
Right, that in terms of the development fund.
So it is not all the monies, royalty
exactly
money
not.
That is going.
Yeah,
but questions are being raised as to that particular percentage. Has it, in fact, been available for the purposes?
The 20% development fund.
Yes.
You know, I think it's been, a bit quite not been exacting. And our
Kweku Boisiako ask, can you publish a 30-year cash flow projections based on the Ejiafa model, juxtaposed side by side with our inflows from the royalties under the current arrangement over the same 30-year period? And 30 years will be the life of a mining lease. And you know, this lasts for the life of a mining lease and even when it is renewed. And he says, I believe this discussion is about maximizing the overall financial and socioeconomic benefits that Ghana should derive from our mineral resources. It's a numbers game. So let's publish the numbers and let Ghanaians interrogate the numbers using whatever models or alternatives they have, so we can cut out the suspicions and personal attacks and rather focus on the real issues. how will you say to, what will you say to him?
I think that that's welcome. It's nothing that we cannot or should not do. And really, in the end, after 3, 4, 5 years, it's all projections as to what you think the mine life is and what the operating companies.
So do you want to do this?
Well, we can. I can go through the 12 operating mines, do your guesstimate for the 4 developing mines, and see where you are going to. You know, the issue.
And this has been the cry. So the issue, the publication. Would you like to do this?
I can get my guys to start on it. You know.
So we can expect this to be done.
Yeah, we can.
Right.
You know. Okay. Because the challenge, you know, of all of us is, you know, how do you do the valuation for where this the price of this company will be on the stock market over the 30 years. Mm.
Yeah. The Clarion call has been pause.
Okay.
Are you going to pause?
No, we're not. I think this is a good transaction. Mm. I think that the issues that have been raised, we have put light on that.
I mean, my firm philosophical belief really is that the capital markets are meant for something that will lead us to equity resources, and we are not leveraging on it, and therefore the question, it's not a question of whether monetization of mineral royalties or listing of the company is bad or good. You know, it is good because that is how you raise resources. The question is the process of doing that. If we have a problem with the process, let's articulate it, let's cure it, but let's not drop, you know, something that will be good for us and reduce our debt exposure. You know, so those are two very different questions. How best to do it as opposed to don't do it. My mind is still there. I know the president has mentioned something about that, going through the AG and parliament again to do that. But it's not something that I think is an asset to the country that one needs to drop. You need to examine all your equity and debt positions and make the best choice for the country. Not a fleeting instances. We would never have done senior high school if we listened to other people. That's 400,000 lives now, you know, that have a chance to do something. We would have stopped short at e-levy because of the noise, and suddenly we have a tax handle that will be phenomenally important for the country. So we need to look at that. So we would never have done senior high school if we listened to other people. That's 400,000 lives now, you know, that have a chance to do something.
Right, so you have been listening to Bright Simmons. That was in 2020. Dr. Yao Graham of the Third World Network. And you also heard Finance Minister Kenneth Forrietta in 2020 before the elections. We want to first ask the questions whether or not the promise has been kept to, among others, broaden consultation, engage chiefs, engage Council of State, and as you heard him in that interview that we had on Newsfile, that they were going to publish a 30-year cash flow projections, as it were, so that we could all be informed. He had tied the projects, as in this, you know, Ejapa, to a number of development projects, making sure that our dead bedding, we are relieved of our dead bedding to a large extent, building a bank, building a, what is it, is an industry, a refinery, doing the hospitals, and more importantly, perhaps, ensuring that the mining communities get what they deserve, are improved. Is that where we still are? And you just heard him now on Thursday saying we are going back to Ijapa. So what sort of review has been done? And what is new? Let me get on the phones, on the Zoom again. Bright Simmons is with us, Dr. Steve Mantiao is with us, and Benjamin Bwache, Executive Director, Africa Center for Energy Policy, is also here with us. So, gentlemen, I'd like you to briefly, first of all, tell us what new has gone on, and if you are familiar with what is now being touted as the new Ijapa. Yes, Bright.
Thank you, Samson. I mean, as far as we're concerned, the only significant developments of note is that there has been a suit by international actors against Ijapa that is pending in the ECOWAS court. I think judgment will be given sometime in July of this year. Nothing else has changed dramatically since then. The government has still not engaged with mining communities. They've not engaged with CSOs. There've been no efforts made to tackle the very critical issues that we've raised, some of which goes to the very heart of the integrity of the process, etc. So absolutely nothing has changed from the perspective of most of the CSOs that were engaged with this matter.
Ben
Bwache, of course, that the passage of time has proven that Ijapa is unconscionable, cannot be countenanced, as unpatriotic, and should completely be consigned.
We will come to that. Benjamin Bwache, what can you update us on? The promised consultations and all that needed to be done are the instructions of the president on the back of Martin Amidou's risk assessment, corruption risk assessment, and the campaign by the 22 CSOs that were against Ijapa.
Yeah, thanks, Samson. I think from our end, we haven't seen any change. We saw some semblance of consultation, one in University of Ghana, which was widely publicized, and you had students who had no clue what this whole transaction is about, to be able to interrogate what government wants to do. So they had the same people who are sponsoring the transaction present their case and leave the room. All right. Beyond that, I mean, we have been tracking some actions, you know, trying to circumvent this whole consultation process through some re-engineering of protocols, you know, with institutions like GRA, GIPC, to establish bilateral investment treaties with Jersey, you know, to circumvent some of the critical concerns that civil society have had. And it was revealing, even listening again to the finance minister, the questions you asked him, you know, about whether he is willing to do the intellectual engagement on the propriety of the transaction. And they have not been available, you know, for us to interrogate what he is trying to do, except to say, in a classical, you know, stream of consciousness fashion, he's trying to tell you that if you are against the transaction, then you may be against the apostles of the land, you know, and not ready to really avail himself for us to interrogate why he wants to, as Bright indicated, give away the most secured stream of revenue in the mining industry into speculative investment, as he's seeking to do. So, I mean, they have not been available. We thought the words of the president were supreme and people were going to abide by that to ensure that the interest, you know, of the state really is high above everybody's interest in trying to understand what we are getting ourselves into and for us to see what better options are available for optimizing the mining industry in general and not just a royalty.
Let me find out what Dr. Steve Mantiao also thinks, if he has a different update. But Ben, you would recognize that that was 2020. We're going into the elections. There are those who said that this was only to, as it were, placate people going into the elections. Yes, Dr. Steve Mantiao, what do you know has changed? Please unmute your mic.
nothing that has come to my attention. And I find the Minister of Finance's comments last, was it this week, quite disingenuous, inviting us to discuss the Ijapa deal because he's bent on bringing it back, when in actual fact, he has not made public the revised transaction documents for us to be able to see how the concerns we've raised about the transaction, of which he's aware, because apart from the press conferences and the campaign that we waged, we had the opportunity of meeting with him and the team, and we laid our issues before him, so he's aware. And so for him to be inviting us to kind of discuss the approach and the process, it's for me something that smacks of intransigence and disrespect to the CSOs. At best, he should have acknowledged the input we have made thus far. He should also should have indicated what particular changes and how our specific concerns have been addressed and all that. But he kind of glossed over them and gave the impression that they were going to proceed regardless. And, I think that does not speak well of a very democratic regime.
In 2020, on this platform, he had been conciliatory and said that, you know, the CSO's involvement was important, was useful, it was good for our growing democracy and all of that. Today, we're hearing him say that, you know, opposition to or criticisms of the e-levy, among others, were noises, and that if the government were to be, you know, fixated on these noises or listening to these noise, it would not have done free SHS. E-levy would not have been, you know, passed, which is an important, you know, tax handle. So that is a signal to you that you have been heard. They are in control. They must, you know, steer the ship of state.
Well, Samson, I think this is the intransigence I talk about. It looks like the government is hell-bent to take Ghanaians for granted on this particular issue. Reference to free SHS and other programs that actually drew some criticisms from Ghanaians is for me untenable in this discourse. This is because, look, nobody had ever actually contested the usefulness of free SHS. It was a matter of the strategy and approach. And I think the current approach has brought untold hardship onto this country. A lot of the fiscal challenges we are facing today are as a result of the free SHS. Mm. We should have actually graduated the implementation.
Which is actually his approach at the time.
That has created a lot of problems and challenges.
He didn't approve of the wholesale approach at the time. Hello, Dr. Mantia. I think we are losing his feed there. So let me get back to Bright Simmons and Ben Boache to get into the details. So, Bright, we tried to get back to memory lane about some of the issues that you had raised at the time. You're still where you are. Nothing changes.
Yes, Samson. And I think the Minister of Finance's comments betray a certain mindset that the government has to be cautious about. It's as if the government feels that merely because in the face of serious opposition they get something done, it's automatically evidence of the success of that thing. So he says that, you know, notwithstanding all the opposition against e-levy as it was designed, they've still got it passed through, and therefore it's a good thing.
He calls it noise. He calls it noise, not opposition.
Yes, despite all the noise, they still get it passed through, and that is a good, I think that's a very dangerous attitude to take. because you could use a lot of power to bulldoze your way through, and that would not necessarily lead to the right outcomes for the nation. But on Ajapa, I mean, we have to, you know, just rehash the arguments we've made so people get the point. In this country, over 95% at this point of our mineral revenues come from gold. And from gold, over 90% of the revenues are royalties. This 5%, or, you know, roughly that amount of the gold sales that are made from this country going to the government, whether or not the mines make profits. We have equity in the mines. We own a percentage of the mines as a state. But because the mines don't declare that much profit, we don't make enough income from that. We also get some corporate taxes, but that is also hinged on profits. So the royalties are the only fairly stable source of income that we get from the mining sector. And the government's plan is to take 75% of this amount from the mines that we are able to track, because we also have a lot of unregulated mining in this country. So from the mines that we're able to track, we want to take 75% of that money, put it into a vehicle, get some of the money up front, and hope that in the future they will get some dividends. So it's a matter of just calculating whether or not what they are saying benefits the country. But the way that they want to do it also matters. The way they've structured the transaction also matters. And we've had a public servant of impeccable integrity, the Honorable Martin Amidu. This was a gentleman that was an attorney general. And that in his own government, when he felt that things were not being done right, openly warned the public, eventually left the government, proceeded to court, used his own resources to secure the money that he felt the country had lost back to the country. He was so respected that when the government changed and the government wanted to set up a special prosecutor's office, they felt that the person best positioned to hold that office was the Honorable Martin Amidu, and they brought him into government. So there could be nobody more independent, nobody more impartial in this matter. He took months investigating this. And on page 55 of a very detailed report, he established clearly, without doubt, that all the evidence he's been given and all the analysis he's performed tells him that there's nothing within the structures that have been created for this Ajapa thing that will not prevent people that are close to government eventually owning Ghana's most secure stream of income from gold through proxies. And therefore, to his mind, the conflict of interest amounts to corruption, and that this was dangerous for the country. That is where we are. He analyzed in great detail how it arose that the government manipulated the procurement processes in the way that it acquired the transaction advice for this enterprise, and that how eventually mechanisms have been created so that what will eventually happen is that you will have trusts in offshore jurisdictions with very limited transparency, and the people that will own this stream of income will be allies and proxies of people that are close to government. They will get this income, but nothing is definitely assured in the long term. So this is where we start. This is where we start. This is the only serious independent analysis of Ajapa that has been conducted in this country by someone that you can perceive to be independent-minded. He had no ill will against the government. It was the government that brought him up from opposition and then made him special prosecutor. He's the only one that the government trusted to look deeply into this matter. He took months, talked to the finance minister and everybody else involved, and then came to that conclusion. For the government to completely dismiss that a few months thereafter and say they are just bringing it back betrays a degree of impunity that frightens most of us in society. But let's go back to the key point. And I know I'm hogging the limelight here because there are extremely qualified people on this show who will do further justice to the matter. But let's go to the fundamental matter at stake. We want to take money that future governments going into 30 years from now, many, many years, because the way the agreement has been structured, this thing could be recycling itself for years. Money that many governments rely upon, a very significant source of money. Money that, given our current projections, more than E-levy, every year goes into the state treasury. We're going to pack it all into some vehicle, sell half, get the money up front, and the remaining half, we leave it to independent so-called directors to determine how much dividend they will pay, if they make any dividend at all. That is the nature of the situation we are facing. This will be the most expensive capital raise in a long time. We know why. That 500 million they say they will make by selling half that entity or 49% of that entity. At least 10% of it will go to the advisors that they have handpicked because they like them. And those advisors and other transactions of brokers and the like will take more than 10% of it. So the implied interest rate of getting that money is higher than if you borrowed at our last rate that we borrowed on international market. It's almost 10%. So when they say that, oh, equity is cheaper, we don't want debt because we are overloaded with debt, that does not make any sense at all, because elementary finance will tell you that equity is more expensive than debt. But in this case, beyond, you know, the general cost of equity, you also have huge transaction costs associated with it. So in fact, we don't even get the full $500 million that we've been promised. On top of that, once the company is incorporated, is listed, the way they've structured the listing is such that it's entirely controlled by minority directors, who are investors that their transaction advisors, because it's a book running IPO, will choose. And they will determine whether or not they invest in Ghana's gold sector, or they pay dividend, etc., etc. Lastly, all the arguments that have been made so far, none of them vindicates the position that this approach helps the country in any way. If we look at current gold price and we even reduce it a little bit in terms of an average for the rest of the year, look at the likely amount of gold production now that we are also seeing significant upticks in some of the mines. We could potentially make almost $300 million or even more this year, potentially. Now, if you go and sell the right to make gold, to earn this income in the international market, and take half of that for $500 million, no other money necessarily certain, it's like saying that money that we can in 2 years make, we should sell the family jewelry in order to get it. Every valuation that has been shown, everyone who have looked at analysis independently, has come to the conclusion that the valuation that you are using for the asset is perhaps one-third of what you could get if you were using an arm's-length transaction. That's not even the most important point. Most important point is that no government should be given the power to deny future governments of revenue in the fashion that is being proposed, at the rate that is being proposed. We've seen instances where consistently the current government takes future streams of income that other governments will use, front load it, keeps that money for today, and forget about future generations. You know, think of all the money from ESLA or the energy levies, think of the money from the GET fund, and consistently we create these structures, front load the money, spend it, forgetting how we're going to pay for our other debts in a few years forward. We think that is not really acceptable. There should be a sense in which, even if the government wanted to securitize the gold through a much more cleaner, efficient process than has been proposed, they should not be looking at all the discretionary income that we earn from royalties, apart from those that are bound by statute to other purposes. All that money that they want to put in, they should have put in a smaller fraction of the gold at a much higher valuation. So we've decided, from the point of view of looking at all the prudential measures, how much gold is rising in terms of production and prices over the long term, how much the price of gold tends to over the century to rise, and that if you fixed the situation the way that they've done it, such that get a little benefit up front, and then you forget about what will happen 1 year from now, 2 years from now, you get into the kind of fiscal situation we are in, where we borrowed so recklessly on the euro market, euro bond market, without proper planning about our debt sustainability. Lastly, and before I come back in, if you give me the chance again in the near future, we've also looked at analysis of, in pure terms, how much are we selling the gold for? Because that's what it amounts. It's some, we have a percentage of the gold we mine in this country that come to us regardless of what happens. 5% of the gold that is mined come to us regardless of what happens. We are proposing to sell half of that upfront. How much are we selling it for upfront per ounce? How much of transactions that look like this, what is often called royalty streaming, where you are selling the money you get in the future today? And we find out that Ghana is being cheated dramatically when you look at comparisons with deals that have been done recently, to the point where in some instances, by looking at all the factors involved, something you can sell today for $1,900, sell in the future for maybe $1,450 if you take into account inflation and everything else, you are trying to sell at $200 per ounce after you've computed all the factors that matter. So our argument is, this is a way to take something that belongs to the people of Ghana and give it to investors and others that are perhaps favored by this administration, but not necessarily people that, if Ghanaians had a say in the matter, they would want to take over those assets.
Thank you very much. What a brilliant submission there with those slides. That's a lot of work that has been done in just how many minutes. Thank you very much, Bright. You're invited to send us your comments and your views. First of all, tell us how you are getting ready for the hikes in tariffs for water and for electricity. We understand that the current circumstances are really harsh. Transportation fares have gone up. Food, everything else is going up. And inflation is running crazy. And this is not limited to only Ghana, but elsewhere in the world. In America, it's getting really bad. Then, what do you say should Ejapa return? The government wants Ejapa back. Should it return? Bright raised the thorny issue on the valuation. There was questions about the devaluation or the wrong valuation and so on. This is how the finance minister responded to that. Let's listen to him again. And this was in 2020. After that, let's hear Ben Bwachi on how we should look forward, including the question of the valuation of this generational assets and wealth.
You say we will get to know the value and that this is nominal. And you had actually, you know, began by saying that we can't possibly know the value before the IPO happens. Now, are we not talking about, like you mentioned, two different things?
Yeah.
Price is different from value. And what value you put on the royalty will affect the determination of the price on the market.
That's not necessarily true.
Okay, help me.
That's not necessarily. So let's say I have a software company, you know, and I go into, so the auditors will say, well, so what are you bringing to the table?
Mm.
Okay, and you have a few equipment, et cetera, et cetera. And so that ends up being $1,000, okay? Then I go to the market, and the market determines that these ideas that I have 100 times multiple of that value. So I'm trying to really make a distinction between presuming, you know, that stated capital or value that is put to create the balance sheet is what it is you go to the market for, and that it is somehow linked in a way in which you then compromise the valuation that we are going to have. And I think that really is a...
There must be an empirical basis for that. And the question that is being asked is, how did we arrive at this value?
And that is what...
And the suggestions coming up is that even if we relied on the 11 mines,
right?
You know, the projected production will show that we should have far more. So that's the concern, really.
And we don't do these things, you know, off the cuff in terms of determining the fair value, as we say, of the financial asset.
Mm.
And so I will have to interrogate, so how many ounces really did they use?
Mm-hmm.
And what are the different mine lives that we are talking about? You know, some 4 to 15, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
I could even add that in future, because we are going to be buying royalties of other companies, that also could be factored in to see what you'll get. Then on an accounting basis, the discount rates have an effect on it, okay?
Mm.
So you do something like 7.5% for the operating mines, you do about 10% for the operating mines, and they struck a balance of about 8.1% to do that. But that for the market valuation, a discount as high as 5% and could be used. And this was all done with IFRS and the auditing firms to really come to something that then is acceptable for us to go.
Right.
But the issue that I really want to stress is that this is not going to compromise the way in which we strike the value for at IPO.
Okay.
In the same way in which Ashanti might have been determined at 480 million and we went at 1.8 million. So we have a history and therefore a comfort to know that yes, we accept that there can be different ways in which one comes to evaluation for the fair market value for the books and a very different way in which the pricing will be done for going to market.
Okay. Right. Ben, what do you say? I think more importantly, and again, having also just, you know, watched and listened to Bright's presentation a while ago, what's the way forward?
Yes, thanks. I think Bright has gone into the process where, you know, the minister is now inviting us because from civil society perspective, our initial, you know, work was really to focus on the propriety of the transaction, you know, to see how we optimize the interest of Ghana. It is not because we didn't know that the process was faulty. We deliberately left that out. And, you know, Martin Amidu did a detailed work, you know, from, you know, the system perspective. And you also had the Attorney General also raising significant concerns about why Ghana would want to do such a transaction. But as I indicated, we wanted to focus on exposing the problems with the transaction, and one of which was the valuation question. And even when you look at the valuation, you can only trend available data on the producing asset. You are assigning 48 leases to Ejapa, and we have only 12 projects on those leases. There can be many, many projects on those leases in the future. So if you use revenues or royalties from the 12 projects to do your estimation and your valuation, of which even in that space, you are still undervaluing the asset, what do you do with the future projects that will come on that concession, for which the investor will still benefit because we have codified the geographic location of these 48 leases into an agreement and assigned the interest to Ejapa in this transaction. So what that simply means is that any investor who puts in money because of projections on the 12 project stands to benefit even if we get hundreds of projects on the 48 leases into the future. And our position is that it's not a simple cash book financial analysis that you can do to be able to estimate what potentially we can get. And the numbers are there. If you track even on the 12th producing asset, you realize that the companies every year discover more gold and the timelines of the project extend. And that is why, you know, the sponsors of the transaction, which again exposes the process, were smart to say that as long as gold can be extracted from those leases, Ejapa has an interest in it. So it is deceptive for anybody to say that, oh, we have 5 or 15 years time frame. And that is not in the agreement. The agreement states that as long as gold can be commercially extracted from these leases, by giving us $500 million, these investors have up to 49% stake on these leases. And that is really worrisome. All right, and if you track back to the process where they're inviting us to see that the people who engineered the whole process from the establishment of the MIF Act to the agreements that subsequently ensued, it is the same people who knew what they wanted from this transaction. All right, and we cannot pretend we do not know at this point. And I think civil society have to do a good job of now also getting into that process to expose why some of these problems are emerging, for which, I mean, nobody wants to listen and engage on the intellectual basis why Ghana cannot take a less risky asset and inject it into the kind of risk and assumptions that we are being exposed to. And the finance minister makes the point that, I mean, if we list on the stock exchange, we could all of a sudden turn this asset into several billion. I heard him mention $38 billion. I mean, what is the numbers? What are the numbers to justify or to show that we can track that growth in the next 10, 15, or 20 years? I mean, the biggest streaming company with most diversified asset is Franco-Nevada. And their assets are about $26 billion for all the metals that they trade in. And for the many years that they have been in the space, you know, diversifying into many portfolios. Finance Minister wants to convince us that in the space of time, we can be able to outperform all other streaming companies that are all hovering around $1.5 billion, you know, to move ahead of Franco-Nevada. That has to be justified. And that intellectual discussion is really crucial at this point. Why we wanted this agreement so badly to go back to Parliament is because of the posturing of the finance minister. And you heard the video that you played from last week, that you either listen to him or not, because he's willing to do it. But so our hope was that if we had this agreement back to Parliament, then we have opportunity to that, then engage in that intellectual exercise and also examine the process that gave birth to this Ejapa transaction. And also, I mean, the new appetite to now, you know, securitize all our natural resources, you know, for a short-term gain. And this is not just happening to our royalty, and we have to pay attention to that. Just last year, we had finance minister supporting GMPs to buy 7% stake in our oil fields. And that asset is now hiding in Cayman Islands. All effort by civil society to get that asset into Ghana has failed. So you have $300 million cash flow that in this critical period of our country can support the budget and provide buffer, you know, for the kind of books that he's looking for to be able to raise debt. But it's hidden in Cayman Islands and it's not part of our budget. All right, there are also speculations about attempt to use the Heritage Fund to also create another security for investment. So civil society will have to double up and now examine the process much more thoroughly to see what is engineering that faulty assumptions around how we can optimize our resources. Let's come back to even some of the assumptions that is creating MIF and many other state enterprises to be able to do business in the space. On this same royalty that is supposed to go into investment, social capital investment, to improve lives of our people, to reduce carnage on our roads, because we passed MIF without consultation, last year, Ghana government gave 1.3 billion Ghana cedis to MIF. In spite of the budget, the big hole in this budget, for MIF to now think about what investments they want to do with it. And they're now saying that they want to invest about $500 million in small-scale mining and track the mining industry. It is only the large-scale mining companies that are contributing significantly to revenue in the mining sector. Even those small-scale mining gives us about 40% in production. So you are now taking the revenue you are getting from the big-scale companies and go and risk it in the small-scale sector. And the operational cost of MIF alone is about 30 million Ghana cedis. You know, if you trend that in the next 5-10 years, the money that you could invest directly into infrastructure development and building the country, you are now getting into that speculative assumption that if you set up vehicles to be able to reinvest the revenue, that is what will generate the returns. We need to interrogate that to see whether, you know, fixing the road as a government is better than assuming that you can make investment and generate returns. All right, so something, it creates a new avenue for us all, civil society, media, and independence to be able to analyze where we are going as a country with our natural resources and apply the brakes at this point. Because if you track just the institutions that have been established in the past 34 years, we are pumping about 100 million Ghana cedis a year just to maintain these institutions. You talk about MIF, you talk about GISDEC, you talk about GIDEC, you talk about Petroleum Hub. They are all siphoning resources that can actually go into social capital and alleviate the plight of our people in these hard times. And we have to take a critical look at these kind of flowery assumptions that are not generating value for the Ghanaian people.
Interesting there. In the circumstance that we find ourselves, clearly the government is determined to proceed. When he had absolute majority in parliament, of course, as people have said, because of elections, it pulled the brakes. Now it says it will go forward and you have a hung parliament. You are still looking for the prospects of it getting to parliament so you can participate. Is that a realistic, expectation?
I mean, from what we have been tracking, it appears not realistic, but I think all of us have to jump in. As I indicated, I mean, finance minister now wants to sign a bilateral investment treaty with Jersey, the tax haven, to allow Japan to happen. They want to sign double tax agreement with Jersey again, all in the name of Japan. So they are determined to circumvent the promise by the president for the transaction to come back to parliament. So these are the things that they are doing that again. Advocacy has to be stronger. Civic action has to be stronger, to pull the brakes on. Otherwise, hope of getting this back through parliament may not materialize, because as the agreement that was approved, if they are able to get the so-called investors to be comfortable with other arrangements, they will push through without going back to parliament.
From where you sit, this must not happen at all. Or what is it, one critical thing that must happen to it before it happens?
You see, from where I sit, royalties are not what you need to securitize or to improve how the mineral industry functions. I heard a minister mention how other countries have fared well, South Africa. If you go to South Africa, royalties are not 5%. Some royalties are below 1%, all right? And the reason why they're able to do that is because they have optimized the industry. They have local capacity to participate in the industry. So their interest is rather in optimizing the value chain and making much more money than royalties. Ghana is still focusing much more on royalty because we haven't gotten to that extent where we have extensive local participation and participation in the industry, and therefore we think that getting the revenue at the top rather works. So the end game really is to look at how do we get where South Africa is, be able to participate, empower our local industries and businesses to participate in the industry and generate more value. If you go and lock your 5% in royalty and for the life of all mines in 48 produce potential leases, how then do you get to the point where you can reduce the royalty to encourage investment upstream so that you can tie your local businesses to the upstream industry when it becomes possible? So you are locking your fiscal regime to a JAPA transaction because your foresight is so limited to what you can get today and not what the industry should look like 5-10 years from now. That is why I keep saying that it goes beyond fiscal understanding of how the industry works to actually optimizing the entire value chain, talking to the rest of the segment. Natural Resources Ministry has a role to play in this. Industry has a role to play in this to ensure that we align, our local businesses and industries to be able to optimize the sector. Oh, we cannot use fiscal engineering to curtail any other process that can better enhance the potential of the mining industry for Ghanaians.
All right. As already invited you already, let's have your views, your comments on your preparedness for the tariff hikes. And what do you say should Ijapa return after listening to all that you hear from our guests? Ben Bwachi raises the issue of the Jersey matter again. Let's hear what the finance minister had to say about this. Obviously, nothing has changed. And then we take a break. We return to hear from Dr. Steve Manteyau. We will then have the opportunity to have all our guests give us their concluding statements.
fundamental question then becomes, what is wrong with Jersey? Yeah? Mm-hmm. And then you say, how are you maximizing this decision that you want to make? So Jersey is part of the United Kingdom, okay, in which they have determined that in giving certain tax forbearances, it enables companies to be listed, to come there, and also list on the London Stock Exchange. So in terms of transparency and ability to see what they are doing, that is not something that we worry about. Registering the company in Jersey, enabling us for the investor to feel comfortable with the jurisdiction and therefore invest, it's important. Mm. So you look at all of the various companies like Wheaton, Franco-Nevada, etc., even the Norwegian fund listed in Luxembourg and the Cayman Islands, etc., so that they take advantage of investor comfort to do that. So you ask yourself, you know, what is it that we have been so much more Catholic than the Pope?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Discover the secret of Alphabet City. A modern gated community with bright and spacious 2-to-3-bedroom apartment unit situated in a stellar location at Sakumonok. Each apartment block is equipped with elevator, fitted kitchen, and elegant bathroom fixtures. An interest-free payment plan of up to 5 years or a mortgage financing of up to 20 years to secure your dream home now. There is nothing more than a secure home. Invest in Alphabet City today for a guaranteed returns on your income property investment. Call us now on 0240-111-1119 or 050-4499-999.
Good business means seeing the possibilities and maximizing opportunities. Making sure you have a responsive support system. That's your business goals. A partner that gives you a stable platform with reliable connectivity and seamless solutions, and better understands the tools required to take you to the next level. With so many moving parts in running a business, we do our best to provide you with some stability. The only kind of stability you can find with MTN Business Broadband, the fastest and most reliable internet provider in Ghana. Making sure you stay ahead and stay connected, because we understand what makes your business tick.
Sign up today on broadband.mtn.com.gh or call or WhatsApp 0244-308-111.
MTN.
We would never have done senior high school if we listened to other people. That's 400,000 lives now, you know, that have a chance to do something. We would have stopped short at e-levy because of the noise. And suddenly we have a tax handle that will be phenomenally important for the country. So we need to look at that.
Hey, welcome back. This is Newsfile. It's your most authoritative news analysis platform. And here on Newsfile, we put Ghana first. And my guest, Bright Simmons, Honorary Vice President, Imani Africa, Dr. Steve Manteo, Policy Analyst and Co-Chair of Ghana Extractive Industry Transparency Initiative, Benjamin Boache,
Executive Director, Africa Center for Energy Policy, ACER. And they all belong to the 22 civil society organizations that kicked against EJAPA on broad matters of, you know, risk and governance issues as far as the deal is concerned. This show is brought to you by Candace Kurtzi of Bank of Africa, strong as a group, close as a partner, MTN everywhere you go, Ashesi University educating ethical and entrepreneurial leaders for Africa, Robert and Sons Optical Services, your comprehensive eye care service provider for 31 years. Waylead Properties, home is where one starts. Duroplast, where Duroplast goes, water flows. Trasarco, fast floor, stronger, faster, and affordable. So the CSOs assisted all of us in exposing important governance vulnerabilities and risks from the deal. And these included the risk of the valuation, or what they call the undervaluation, woefully undervalued. You had other experts like Future Qatar and the rest of them writing about this subject matter and saying that we're giving just too much of what we could get, you know, and that we stood to get a lot more if we could just wait and manage the assets more properly. They had issues with loss of control over the gold sector governance, loss of ability to repay existing loans. There was limited consultation, and there were also questions of transparency and accountability, and then corruption risk, which Martin Amidou did the assessment as special prosecutor, and the deal failed all the tests. K. Amofa says, it seems in Ghana, public servants are employed to tell citizens about existing problems instead of proposing solutions. It's always not the fault of the public servant, but everyone else. God help us. Eugene Plastique says, intellectual fisticuffs on Newsfile. This is what we need most of the time on issues. Professionals from the sectors involved. Confront each other with the facts and figures to arrive at the best possible way forward. Linka says, price of utilities, especially water, should be increased on regional basis. That is, areas of regions that encourage and condone galamse and pollution of water bodies should be made to pay more. Well, you go to those places where the mining goes on, and you find that those who are actually behind the mining are from your capital, national capital. The Emperor says, tariff increment at this critical moment is just insensitive. Prices of goods and services have seen astronomical hikes in the past months. Azuma says, we must strengthen parliament and put in mechanisms to block the blatant maneuverings we saw on TV when e-levy was passed. This would help us to check executive excesses in times of this cruel EJAPA quagmire. Parliament is weak in the current regime. K. G. Kofi Amoa says, let's admit and open our eyes to this. The government wants to do all it can to still control and benefit from the nation's resources, even in opposition. Fianco Henry says, if you manage the job well, you will have enough to support the company in hard times. They have squandered the revenue, nothing left to support the economy. Right, thanks for your messages. Now let me go to Dr. Steve Manteyao. Dr. Steve Manteyao, you had this to say this week, so I want you to hear this first, and then let's hear you continuing from that. You spoke briefly about this EJAPA deal,
And this is what you had to say. Please listen.
It got into my heart that at the peak of the campaign against this arrangement, and following the release of Mr. Martin Amidou corruption report, the president stepped in and asked that the process was paused, and that the concerns that we're raising must be considered and factored into the arrangement, and then brought back to Parliament for reconsideration. So it isn't like we've been criticizing the deal without making suggestions as to how it can be improved. This is what we've been doing. We had expected that the finance minister, given that it's been made public that the transaction documents have been revised, would have been, if he were acting in good faith, disclosed the revised document for us to be able to interrogate it and assure ourselves that the concerns we had about the transaction had been adequately taken care of. Some of us have been trying to lay hands on the supposed revised documents without passing. So I will take opportunity of this medium to request the finance minister to publicly disclose the revised EJAPA transaction document so that we can all discuss it from a very informed position and see how together we can improve it for the benefit of this country.
You said this a while ago, if you do not get a voluntary, you know, public disclosure as you demand of the finance minister, it would have been expected that this naturally would have happened. If he doesn't do that, if the government doesn't do that, what next?
Well, Samson, I will be pleasantly surprised if the government did that. So even in requesting that government made full disclosure, I'm not deluded into thinking that they will oblige. Let me say that all government is doing with EJAPA is trying to avoid scrutiny in terms of how they manage our mineral revenues in this country. Because in 2016, they promised us in the MPP manifesto a very comprehensive framework for managing mineral revenues, similar to the Petroleum Revenue Management Act, which has been hailed globally as one of the best, in fact, the best in Africa. So we're expecting a Mineral Revenue Management Act. And what did we get? A MIF, which actually has built into it a mechanism to shortchange this country. Now, if the government indeed has nothing to hide, they would have voluntarily, first they would have engaged the CSOs following the president's directive. And they would have also disclosed the outcome of the consultations and the revised documents. These they are unable to do because they know nothing substantial has changed. And so, well, the option we have as CSOs, as citizens, is to raise the concerns and hope that all Ghanaians will actually be part of this resistance of this scheme to shortchange Ghana.
Right. So, in the next 3 minutes, let me hear from Bright Simmons. What can you say in a minute will be your concluding comments moving forward?
Give me a second. I'm just going to show you something on the screen in just the very short time that we have.
That's all right. The Constitution in its very important provision tells us what minerals are in this country. Article 257 says all public lands in Ghana shall be vested in the president on behalf of and in trust for the people of Ghana. It proceeds to tell us where we stand when it comes to minerals. He's only holding them in trust for the people of Ghana. You are the beneficiaries. He has a fiduciary relationship with you, and he has to discharge that responsibility. Do you have it?
Yes, I have it. I just want to reemphasize the fact that when the finance minister keep trying to create the impression that Ajapa as designed will more or less be valued by the stock market, he's not allowing the facts to speak for themselves. I mean, the agreement is very clear. There is a share subscription. Somebody is buying the rights even before you go on the stock, you go on the IPO process. So there is no doubt whatsoever that the valuation is cast in concrete in the contracts. And I'll put it on the screen so you can read it for yourself. You can take a picture, you can read it for yourself.
Right.
So there's no room in this analysis that allows you to make the case that, you know, the market is wise and the market will make the valuation work. Secondly, we know also that there is no effective term, which is a point that Ben has already said. Based on how much gold gets produced in those areas, if we discover 10 times more gold, Japan makes 10 times more money. So this is really problematic. Next, if the finance ministry believes that the way to maximize our mineral resources is to get more Ghanaians to own assets, then the simple thing to do is for the $300 million that they are earning, $200 and something million to $300 million that they'll be earning going forward, they can invest that in equity in smaller scale projects and invite Ghanaians in on convertible debt basis so that we have equity in those areas. You don't need a convoluted structure hosted in a tax-free jurisdiction, a tax haven, listed on the stock market, etc., etc. None of that add anything. The fundamental goal that you want to put in money into equity holdings in the industry. Why do you want to alienate the little we have in order to create room for some investors who sit in London and are controlling London to come and own this year?
All right.
Another point that is important is maybe last point.
Mm.
If they really want to insist that the entity that is in London will still be controlled by the state of Ghana and therefore the rest of our equity that will be in that entity will benefit Ghana, then there are options that the London Stock Exchange itself allows for that kind of control. The sovereign listing options, you know, where you can create a sovereign controlled commercial company and list them. Why did they not use that option? That tells you that the ultimate aim of Ajapa is to alienate the national ownership, put the ownership of the structure in the hands of investors who are favorable to the people that are structuring the deal. So unless the people who have been indicted by the special prosecutor are not longer involved, CSOs are going to view what they do with extreme prejudice, because the special prosecutor was very clear that the purpose of the transaction appears to be to turn it over to the promoters what is actually at this stage Ghanaian owned assets.
Okay.
Gentlemen,
thank you all so very much. This is all time will allow us. My guests have been Bright Simmons, Honorary Vice President Imani Africa, Dr. Steve Mantiao, Policy Analyst and Co-Chair of the Ghana Extractive Industry Transparency Initiative, Benjamin Boatier is Executive Director, Africa Center for Energy Policy, ACEP. And as always, my outfits is by Habil Scooter. You can call them 0200 84 1988. Have a good afternoon. I'm Samson Ladi Anyanini.